Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Janice Haith, the Deputy Chief Information Officer of the Department of Navy for the U.S. Navy. Janice, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
You're welcome.
This is a kind of an exit interview for you. I wanted to talk about your decision to retire, which is just coming up in February. So talk a little bit about that decision and what comes next for you.
Retirement is something I'm looking forward to. Mainly, I decided to do it because I'm in the old federal retirement system, and there comes a certain point where it doesn't make sense anymore to continue to work. So it's time, and so I'm ready to make that change. And what comes next is I'm still deciding what I'm going to do, but I will be going back into the workforce, but on the other side of the house.
So do you think you'll stay in the federal market, or do you think you'll do something totally different? You'll, you know, be a volunteer, you know, work at a school teaching IT or something?
Oh, no, I'll go back into the commercial sector space that works with the federal government.
Talk a little bit about your career a little bit. You've been with the Navy for how long? And as you mentioned, you're at that point now with the CSRS. It just makes sense to retire. So 30, 40 years in government, right?
Roughly 34 years in government, so it's been a long career. But, you know, I've worked at Navy, I've worked at DOD, I've worked both the defense sector as well as the regular civilian sector.
It's a wide career, so talk a little bit about some of those other jobs, you know, that you've held. You said defense sector, civilian sector. What other agencies have you worked for, and what sticks out to you from your careers, some of your favorite jobs?
So I worked at the DOD CIO's office for several years. Before that, I was at a defense agency. And before that, I worked for the Air Force. So that would be from like the late 80s, like 89 to the present, has been in the DOD. Before that, I worked for the Department of Justice. And so I worked on things that were going on at that era, which would have been Iran-Contra and things like that. So it's been a good career. It's just been a good career.
Now, did you start out in IT or did you fall into IT? Sometimes, you know, I hear both stories from longtime feds where they came in doing one thing and ended up learning IT and becoming the IT specialist, and then all of a sudden they're a CIO. Or was your background always in the technology world?
No, my background didn't start off in the technology world. I actually started off as an investigator with the Office of Personnel Management, and then moved up into that. There was a time back in, I'm dating myself, the 80s, when there were some challenges going on. And then I left OPM and went to Justice and got to apply what I learned as an investigator to that venue where we did security clearances for, you know, DOJ employees, the contractors that work there, did a lot of security work then.
That's fascinating. So how'd you end up in the IT world? How did that morph from doing security clearances and background work into becoming the deputy CIO?
So I came to DOD and worked in the Air Force. That was something that they thought I might want to do, so I started dabbling in it, and then it became a full-blown thing. I started working on IT projects. And it just evolved from that point.
When you look back on your career, is that kind of a good feeling that you've had all these different experiences in government, but in the end, this IT thing that you kind of fell into, that seems to work out pretty well for you and the government?
Well, I think it built on what I learned from a personnel security standpoint, because IT was critical to personnel security, and it was an enabler to how personnel security evolved and where we are today. So it was a stepping stone to that. And so I think it was a great career relative to that. It allowed me the opportunity to meet other people from other organizations, see how others do things, just use commercial practices for federal activity.
One of the things, though, when you look back over your career, I mean, you know, the government has changed quite a bit. Talk a little bit about those changes that you've seen. Talk it from a personal perspective, not necessarily Janice Haith, but like, you know, when I always heard stories, oh, well, you used to be able to smoke at your desk, or you could open the windows, or you could just walk into any federal building and walk around. What changes have you seen from that culture side? And then we'll talk about technology side as well.
I think those changes, like not being able to smoke at your desk, I'm not a smoker, but I think it's better. The workplace environment is better for not being able to do that, because people, you know, you were walking into offices where people were just smoking, and then if you don't smoke, it could be a hazard to your health. I like the fact that I don't ever remember, to be honest with you, being able to walk in a federal building without some kind of federal ID or something. So it may have tightened up, but I don't think I've ever worked anywhere where you could just freely walk in the building. You always had to have some kind of credential to get in. Other things, like I think you've seen more diversity. I think you see people more sensitive to other people's lives, what they say, what they do, how they say it. I think those are all for good, and I think those are goodness there from that as well. So I think a lot of the changes that people have seen, they are things just, you know, have done well. I think things have been beneficial for that, and they've helped us out.
It's interesting when you talk about kind of the changes. It's also more women, more minorities, more people, as you said, diversity has been such a big role. Do you see the same thing within the technology world? Do you see that same changes happening in the technology world from a people perspective?
Yeah, I do. I think that what we've seen is an evolution of us not being willing to partner with our commercial partners to more now willingness to partner with our commercial partners. And I think that's been beneficial to how we move forward with not just information sharing, but just embracing the new ways of doing business today. And I think it allows us greater flexibility relative to just advancing the cause of what we're working on. I think it's been really good.
And from a technology perspective, you bring up the industry side. Industry and government relationship, as you said, is much different. There's also technology is much different. And, you know, in the late 1980s, you and I were working on 286 computers and a dot matrix printer. Now you have, I don't know what they're up to, Pentium 12s or whatever, and laser printers that can do, you know, 100 pages a minute. Give me a sense of the biggest changes you've seen over your career around technology.
Just like you said it, we've gone from a 286 to, well, I don't even know what version we're on either, come think of it. We're using laptops now instead of a CPU at your desk for a lot of capabilities. You're more mobile. You know, we do a lot of things with our phones. We're connected 24/7 for the most part. We use new technologies that allow us to share information and collaborate better with all of our staffs and people away from us. So it doesn't matter where you are physically, you can still work with people. And so those things have been good. So I think from that perspective, well, some people may not like it, but you don't have to always be on travel. You can do things remotely, and that's a good thing. I think those are good things.
When you look back, was there any time when you thought when the new technology came out and you said, wow, this is going to be the be-all, end-all, this will be the next great thing, and whether it turned out or not, what are some of the memories you have, you know, looking back over your career around the way technology has been used, impacted the federal environment? Just give me a sense of what are some of your most fondest memories about technology.
If I go back to when I was with OPM, the fact that we used to fill out a paper, security clearance paperwork, you know, the SF-86, and now it's all electronic, that was a big change. I mean, can you imagine what it's like using all that paper to constantly screen and scope those investigations? Now you do it electronically. They can get a lot of the checks done faster. They get the results back faster, so people get to work faster. So that's one where you've seen technology. The fact that DOD, we built JPASS, Joint Personnel Adjudication System. Actually, I was the program manager for JPASS. And so when it delivered, it capitalized on some of that innovation that OPM was doing, but it took it to another level for DOD so that information, the adjudicators adjudicated electronically. The results were transmitted electronically. You didn't have to fax. You didn't have to call. You could get that information just by looking it up in a computer. That, to me, was time-saving things that people were able to do, and so we benefited from it overall. So technology has been a true enabler to our ability to accomplish a lot of activity on the business side of what we do, but as well as some of our operational aspects.
And I think on the operational side, I know that I have some questions later on that maybe we'll get to around the operational side of where things stand now within the Navy. But give me a sense from an operational standpoint, things are much different for the Marine, for the sailor, for the seaman in terms of how they have access to technology. And when you've gone out and gone to bases and been on ships, you must see the big differences there too.
Well, yeah, we use technology now to do inventory control. We use commercial tablets to look at inventory control on ships so they transmit the information quickly versus, you know, stubby pencil and paper and then having to fax scan it or however they got it back to a shore base. They can get that information timely. You can do your training. You know, the military has required training for their personnel. They can do that all electronically online now so they don't have to have those massive books that they used to have. They can take their test online. They do a lot of things now they just make it easier, and it's a better quality of life for everybody. Whether you're on a ship or you're on a shore base, you can do those things better. You can do them a little bit faster, but you're able to get the information to people quicker.
That's probably the biggest change you've seen during your career is that quickness, right? That you mentioned earlier about mobility and being online all the time, and you don't have to be on travel anymore. You can always be connected. At the same time, would you say that's also one of the perils of all this technology, one of the challenges of how to disconnect once in a while, how to, you know, before you'd go home at night maybe in, you know, 1990, and you wouldn't check an email at home, you know, your day was done when your day was done, but now we don't have that. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing for the federal community?
So I think you have to find balance on that. And so everybody doesn't have a mobile device, and so for those that do, you have to strike a balance of how much you're going to work and when you're going to do it. Because if you don't find the balance, then you lose. You in the end lose. So I think most people have struck a balance with how much they're going to do, when they're going to do it. But there comes a point where you have to put that device up at night. You have to regroup. You have to recharge. You have to get your brain cells back again. And so you can't be on it 24/7. So I'm of a different generation than the millennials. I think they stay on devices 24/7 from what I can tell. That's just how they are. That's the way they live and breathe now, and it's something you have to be accepting of. But I also think they do strive to find some balance. They're different. It's a different group of people coming up now. They look for the balance, but they're also connected. I mean, they're always connected, but they know when to put it down, too. I think most of them know when to put it down.
I like that. Most of them do, definitely. I think we can point to a few people in all our offices who'd say, you know, just put your phone down. It's okay. And things will not end. Give me a sense as well of the workforce. We talked a little bit about the changes in the workforce. When you look back over your career, do you see a change in the workforce, the people you're recruiting, the skill levels, the way you're recruiting, you know, from an IT perspective? What has changed there the most?
You're finding a population that's, I would say they've always been educated, but the education level is different from the fact of the practicality of what they worked on. Their writing is different. They're more pointed in some instances. They use less jargon than we do. You know, we're very acronym crazy in DOD. They're not as acronym crazy. They'll talk it or spell it out. They question. Where people may not have questioned before, they question. They're like, well, why do you do this? Well, what's the point? I mean, they don't see it. But if you explain it to them and they see it, then they more embrace it that way. So I think from that perspective, they bring new and fresh ideas into the organizations. They allow us to expand our horizons. I learn from them, too, and they learn from us. And so it's a cross-sharing of information. So I think it's a good mix because out with the old, in with the new, yes, but we learn from each other.
We have to take a break. My guest is Janice Haith, the Deputy CIO of the Department of Navy for the U.S. Navy. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest is Janice Haith, the Deputy CIO of the Department of Navy for the U.S. Navy. Let me move over to some more of the specific effort that you guys have been doing over at the Navy. There's been a lot of programs you've worked on during your career. Give me a sense, some of the programs you're most, or projects you're most proud of over your career. Specifically, let's focus on your time with the Department of Navy.
I've worked for the U.S. Navy, the CNO, not the Department of Navy, so to speak. So service side, never with the department side, so to speak. I would say, if I looked at my career overall, I would say the fact that we did IT efficiencies, yeah, we took a budget hit and had to do them, but we made some fundamental changes overall that I didn't think we would ever do, like enterprise software licenses. I mean, that has been a huge opportunity for us, where we are now buying licenses from, you know, retailers at a better price. We get better service from the way we do our software upgrades. We change the way we use our devices. I mean, we used to be tied to one vendor. Now we are vendor agnostic for the most part. That's a good thing. I mean, that was another area where you saw commercial technology become part of the day-to-day fabric of what we do. Data center consolidation. It hasn't been great, but we've done it, and we started it, and it's a hard thing to do. It is very hard to do, and people are, you know, are having some challenges with it. But who would have thought that, one, we had as many data centers as we did, but two, that we would start consolidating them and moving to commercial providers to do the same thing we're doing, but cheap, and they offer just as much of security as we do. So the partnerships and relationships we have with our sister services, our relationship with the Marine Corps and the Coast Guard, our maritime partners, we're rocking and rolling with ensuring we have that maritime perspective a lot better and tighter than we did before from an IT perspective, not from a warfighting perspective. I think the synergy, and I know people hate the word synergy, but there's a synergy there to do the right thing, to be more efficient, to utilize our commercial partners with us to achieve a common goal at the end of the day, which is to ensure the protection of our freedoms, and that's what DLD does.
Let me go back to the software. I know I've seen you speak about that over the last few years. Do you have a sense of savings, a percentage, or at least give me can you quantify how much savings and what's different today than maybe it was 5, 6, 7 years ago?
Our savings have exceeded, I would say, over $450 million over the last 3 years. And what's different is, so we used to have a hard time tracking requirements of what everybody needed. We don't have that problem anymore. We can tell because of what people are buying. So we know what the next step is. We know what the next iteration of software will lead us to buy. And so we reduce our cost outlay by doing that. Or our product choices, we've gotten more standardized. So we don't have to customize as much anymore. We use the products right out of the box, which I'm sure the vendors like because they hate the fact that we customize so much. But now we can use more COTS products without having to make all those major modifications, and they work well. I think the fact that we have vendors and resellers that are willing to work with us to help us get to the bottom of what those products are, but also be able to use them, and we can move them around if organization A thought they might need 20, but they find out they need 30, and organization C said they needed 50, but now they only need 20. We can shift it around without having to go back and do another buy. So it's allowed the contracting organizations, freed them up to buy things that we can't do from an enterprise perspective. I mean, you know, something, and this is innocuous, but something like buying chairs. Everybody buys different chairs. But there's no single, you know, it's not vendor specific. It's just that it depends on where we are geographically, what you can get, where you can get it, and how fast you can get it.
On that same vein, you talk about data center consolidation. It's a challenge, but things are getting some progress. Can you just give me an update on that initiative?
So it's moving along. We are about to issue the new cloud first strategy, which we're going to move. We're going to take it to the next level and basically move as much as possible into the cloud environment for all of our applications. And I think you will see as more vendors get approved by DOD, we will be using those, and you'll see probably the Navy's data centers. We were going to have about 10. We'll probably go down maybe to 3 or 4 of that. And they'll be for things that we really can't. It's not that we can't move them to the cloud, that we choose not to move to a commercial provider.
I know that you're going to probably not be around when that new memo comes out, so if you're unable to talk about it, I understand. Do you know when that's going to come out? Are we talking about a couple weeks, a couple months?
I would say in the next 2 weeks.
All right, so something to look forward to. We'll definitely follow up with you guys on that. We have to take a break. My guest is Janice Haith, the Deputy CIO of the Department of Navy for the U.S. Navy. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest is Janice Haith, the Deputy CIO of the Department of Navy for the U.S. Navy. The other piece of it that I want to just talk about is the NGEN program. I know it's a big program. I know they had an industry day just recently. But talk a little bit about, just from your experiences with NMCI, the Navy Marine Corps Intranet, how the first NGEN program, how is that all informing this effort going forward?
Wasn't here when Navy first did NMCI, so I can only tell you from when I started, which at that time when I came, it wasn't NMCI. It was called that COS contract, the Continuity Services Contract, and then it evolved to what it is today. I've seen us mature. I've seen us mature in how we go about. This is where the partnership with private sector has become really important and part of what we do on a day-to-day basis. Our relationship with HP has enabled us to take advantage of technology and solutions that they were using, say, HP corporate, that we hadn't been thinking about using, but now we are. We have been able to reduce our footprint, physical footprint, with what we had from, I'd say, 15 years ago in terms of HP data centers that operated for the Navy. We're down to significantly less. If you used to go into an environment and we had 100 racks, we might now have 10 racks. That's how much computing has changed. You don't need as many people to do the work anymore. We do more lights-out data center or lights-out facility operations. We're protecting our information differently. You know, we're very keenly aware of the cyber issues, and so we protect it so that we want to make sure that our people are protected at all times and their information is protected. And while everybody does what they can 100% of the time, we can't always win because the adversary is the adversary, and they're just as equally competent as we are. And sometimes they may succeed, but we can get them out, but sometimes we can't. It just depends on what's going on. But I think you've seen our cyber postures improve. We're better at doing cybersecurity. We're more conscious about it. It's all the way down to commander's intent and business, so the awareness is up.
And I think that's one of the keys of the awareness piece, because if people can understand what to look for, how to deal with it. And that actually is a great segue to the Joint Regional Security Stacks item. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. My understanding is that the Navy is looking to move to version 2 when that is ready. Is that still the plan? Is there anything more details you can update us on the JRSS efforts?
So we're actually starting to migrate now for what we call our accepted networks. It's those networks that we have that are not currently under NMCI. So we're moving those now to JRSS based on where JRS is in place for the rest of the department. So 2.0 is our on-ramp, and so we're still sticking with that plan. There's no deviation from that plan.
Some of the things about the Navy and the move to JRSS is this idea of, well, we've already kind of reached 1.0, and that's why we're going to 2.0, and you said that's still the plan. Do you feel like, you know, generally speaking, that JRSS will benefit the Navy from a cyber perspective?
I think it'll change the way we look and do things. It will definitely have benefit from the overall Doden perspective, but it provides an extra layer of defense, and I think that's a good thing. I think we will derive benefit. We're still in the learning mode, and we've only had one site that made that transition, so we don't know enough. If I listen to what the Army says, yeah, we'll derive huge benefits downstream. But I think it's an evolution. It'll happen. It won't happen overnight. It's a capability that we will embrace and we will use, and we'll change the way we need to operate in some instances, but we all derive the benefit from it, not just Navy. Everybody does.
When you said if we listen to what the Army says, I thought you were going to make an Army-Navy joke there, so probably I was ready.
Well, I mean, the Army's our partner.
I know, of course. You know. But you know, there's a good rivalry. I know we're almost out of time. I just want to catch up on two more things. The Windows migration to Windows 10, big effort from the DoD CIO. Give me sense, because you talked in May about getting some creative ideas for how to get the Navy off of Windows XP and Windows Server 2003 on the embedded platforms. That's all connected to this migration. Can you give me an update on those efforts?
We, like everybody else in the department, it's not so much an issue of moving fast, it's moving smartly. And so we've had some challenges with what works with the current Windows 10 versus our capabilities, which points to the fact that we, one, are still reducing our application inventory, two, we need to make some configuration changes, and they're doing it. So we have already started deploying Win 10 on a lot of our desktops from our tactical, the ships. It's a little bit different. We've got some work to do there. We will probably not make that 2018 date for the ships, but we'll be close, not far behind. I would say by 2019, maybe 2020 in some instances, we'll be there. But no different than the Army and the Air Force. We all have got the same challenges relative to our tactical capabilities and the embedded IT that's in them and what we can and can't change and when we can change it without impacting operations. So, you know, we don't bring ships back to sea to do things like this. So you have to wait for the ship cycle, to the maintenance cycle to go through, and that's when we'll do the changes. So we can't just turn it on a dime.
One of the things you'd mentioned previously was getting some creative ideas. Did you guys ever do any kind of, if you will, challenge or collect any ideas from sailors and seamen and Marines about how to address this issue of moving off Windows XP and Windows Server 2003?
Yeah, we did. And they gave us a lot of good ideas, and the systems commands are implementing some of those ideas, how they're going to make those adjustments and changes. It's required them to do some manual intervention where they need to. But all in all, they've been putting some practices in place that they hadn't didn't think they would ever need to do, but they're doing them so we can get those capabilities off. Our XP inventory afloat, we're close to getting almost all of it off. We're closer than we were 2 years ago.
Obviously, good news. I know we're almost out of time before I let you go. I usually ask this question for what kind of advice do you have for the next deputy CIO, but I'll broaden it out a little bit, if you will, and just ask about from your experience in government, from your experience over the last 34 years within DOD, within the civilian agencies, what kind of advice do you have for future, if you will, CIO, IT federal leaders who are coming in, whether career people or political people?
So I think they need to be open, flexible, and adaptable to change. I think they need to be 100% willing to just not take necessarily, not only say the word risk, but be able to be forward thinking. Just because we didn't do it doesn't mean we can't do it. Be open to making those adjustments if it's going to foster and help us further down the road. I think that, you know, with anything else right now, we've got the new hiring freeze going on. So I don't know what that's going to do in terms of new people, but I think you have to understand this is a generation that's different. They are our connected generation. They use different tools, and we need to be open to how do those tools work with the way we do our business. And I think once you can, you know, accept and move forward with that, I think things will work out. But it's just an evolution.
All right, very good. I know we could talk longer, but unfortunately we're out of time. Janice Haith is the Deputy Chief Information Officer of the Department of Navy for the U.S. Navy. Janice, thank you so much for your time today, and obviously thank you so much for your service over the last 34 years.
Okay, thank you.
We have to take a break. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. In this segment of the show, we change gears a bit and listen to an excerpt from a panel discussion at the recent FCIA Northern Virginia Enterprise Information Small Business Forum. The panel features Donald Harder, Patrick Fitzgerald, Patrick Truver, and Phil Anderson, who run the Navy's Program Executive Office Enterprise Information Systems Small Business Centers.
We're a little bit different than any of the other PEOs that you might be familiar with or might have had business with in the past. A lot of those other program offices are very involved in tactical or command and control or other very practical DOD-specific type systems. POEIS is a little bit different in that we are very concerned and very closely aligned to corporate America and how we do business and what industry is doing. How can we tie in with how industry is doing business? A big part of that is my boss's, his concept of highways and cars. Within POEIS, we have program offices that are associated with building the highway. That's the networks, making sure that we have the infrastructure in place so that the cars or the systems and applications that have to run on that network have something to go ahead and get in and get off of. Really, we build the network, we build the infrastructure for programs and applications that run across the entire gamut of Navy business. We are very particularly interested for ourselves in the defense business systems, but we also are participating with other programs that run tactical systems as well. A little bit of our alignment, if you're familiar with the SPAWAR Systems Command, we are one of three PEOs working under Admiral Lewis. So within our team here, you can see some of the alignment that we have with other SysComs as well. So we have one program office that is very tied into NAVC SysCom, the O4 team there, working the Navy Maritime Maintenance Enterprise Solution coming forward in the future. We also have two program offices that are very closely aligned to Marcor SysCom. So we are definitely a Department of Navy type of PEO. We have a lot of broad reach across the entire spectrum of Navy programs and capabilities. The folks that are here and the others that you will meet later on this afternoon if you do the one-on-one sessions, they occupy a very critical zone within the Navy's business systems in terms of getting these capabilities out to the sailors and the people that need to see them. I will introduce to you Mr. Patrick Fitzgerald, who is the program manager of PMW 240.
PMW 240 is a program of programs. It's a broad portfolio of IT systems, about 70 major investments, 7 different resource sponsors. Leaves us a little bit confused during palm season right now. But we basically do military HR, so manpower, personnel, training, and education, and a large number of things to help support the Department of the Navy administer itself more effectively. Much like the rest of POEIS, we are a matrix organization. We've got our headquarters here in Arlington. We're centralized in that respect for our planning, but we are very distributed for our actual execution. And that, you know, allows us to recruit and use the best talent, both government and industry, that's available across the country without a problem. So we are used to working in that way. There's lots of opportunities to work with us across the country. Upcoming opportunities. Right now, I've only got one major one on my plate, and that's going to be a large business one, unfortunately. We'll have a 30-plus percent set-aside requirement in it. I will say that last year was a very good year for us. We did manage to award successfully three major small business contracts valued at over $110 million for support services in our office. And we're finishing up right now the source selection for our multiple award IDIQ for developing systems. Really appreciate the industry participation there. It's a very active competition. We've got a lot of good industry interest, and so hoping to get that awarded in the next few months. Patrick Truver.
The reason I'm here today is to tell a little bit about what we're doing for this electronic procurement system. So I can go to that in a couple of slides. But our portfolio in 220 is Navy's ERP, this new electronic procurement system, as well as time and attendance. So the main opportunity that we have is the electronic procurement system. We've got a sunset date of September of this year, or of next year, 17, for the standard procurement system. So we got a pretty quick timeline. So what is this? It replaces the existing contract writing system. It's an end-to-end solution. We've got a lot of information out on a public portal. So for example, we've got the draft RFP out there. We've got the performance work statement, system engineering spec, test and evaluation master plans. There's a lot of information out there to start looking at it. So over the past year, we've done a couple things. We've released RFI information, a couple of the material that's needed for the small business as well as large businesses to recognize what we're looking for. We had an industry day in September 26th, and a lot of information is out there for recognition of what we're doing. You'll notice up on the first bullet, we've got 30% small subcontracting goal. So that's just for our program. Usually we're tracking a 32% at the agency-wide, so we're consistent with what the expectations are. So the program itself, it's looking for a FAR-compliant contract writing system, and it's going to be full and open competition. What I'm looking for is some information to help us with our data migration. So that's why we're looking at analytics and intelligence. We're looking for some of your availability for cloud hosting. Naturally, we're looking at FedRAMP Plus. So please come see me after the session this afternoon. And the topic down here that Steve talked about earlier on the GSA or DLA's information, they're using Enterprise Service Bus, middleware, those types of things. So I want to hear what your thoughts are as well. Just to give you an example of where we are today, we've got about $45 million out there in contract, both internal program office and with our system center activities. So it just gives you a little feel for what we have to date. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Anderson.
Phil Anderson, Deputy PM for NIN. So for the next slide, next, please. Okay, good. So I want to focus your attention really on three areas. One is the bottom bullet where it says network transformation, enhancing the ability to increase speed to outcome. So we do a lot of work that's all related to IT service delivery. So if you look at what we do, we have networks that are CONUS networks, we have OCONUS networks, and we have peers where ship or submarine parks. They're looking for IT services, so we actually link them up to the services that are on shore. So when you add those networks together, basically we're providing services to about 700,000 users. Those 700,000 users have different things that they want at different times. So when we break it down, it basically boils down to you're going to change your network and services based on some kind of customer demand. And keep in mind there's 700,000 of them. There's stakeholder interests. So your senior leaders in Navy are always looking for ways to create efficiencies, improve service to the warfighter, keep pace with other higher-level policies. There's technology advancements. So in the IT space, as you know, things don't stand still very long. And then there's what I would call industry trends. You can look across and you can read the news in terms of how companies are aligning themselves with other companies to buy technologies, to buy people, to buy expertise. So we look at those four things: customer demand, stakeholder interests, technology advancements, and when we line those things up together, right now, currently, we have 160, between 160 and 180 projects at any one time that are based on a need to improve some kind of service to a customer. When you look at the other projects that are in the books to make sure that your facilities can accommodate those IT services, then there's about 800 projects going on at any one time. So that's the network and the services that we're managing, 800 plus projects, trying to keep the customers happy, trying to maintain the services that we have. So you have that bullet at the bottom that talks about network transformation. So we've been running a network basically that's mostly hardware, software centric. When we look at what industry's doing from a cloud standpoint, cloud technologies, virtualization, software-defined networking, those kinds of things, it puts us in a position where we start to look at how do we maintain good SA on the 800 projects, keep track of the customer demands like we need to with a network that I believe is quickly becoming out of vogue with where technology's going. So the transformation that we're proposing, you're going to see some of these things in the engine recompete. You'll see some of the things in the small business contracts that I'm talking about. It's really taking a look at the network, our processes, the people, the tools, the technology, and then step back and say, will that combination of people, tools, technology, and processes support the IT service deliveries in the future? So the current state, yes, we do have a CONUS, and we have OCONUS networks. We have peers. We're trying to integrate that so that we have common processes. So you go back to people, process, tools, and technology. You don't want one set of things going on in your OCONUS arena while you've got a completely another set for your CONUS arena. We're going to take the two networks together, learn from both, pull those processes together so that you have one contiguous network. So the end state, it's really a CONUS and OCONUS network where we look at some of the unique things that we need to do for our OCONUS customers in the fleet, make sure those are part of it. Take the best of breed for both. Security is one of those things, and then make sure that we're doing the same thing across the board. Two main areas where we solicit to help a small business. One is the NGEN contract. There's a 35% small business requirement. There's some numbers there, so probably don't remember the last time I was here, but we've had a slow start with small business participation on the NGEN contract, primarily because we were making significant changes in the way we were doing business. Well, we did ask HP, hey, take control of those processes. But as you see, for period five, and each period is every 6 months, so 2.5 years into the contract, we're starting to meet those goals. You take 35% of $800, $900 million a year, you're looking at $250 to $300 million a year that's going to small business. The part B of that equation, though, is the work that we do within the program office. So there's the engine contract that's doing service delivery for the 700,000 users. And then there's a program office operation. So seven small business prime contractors supporting us in those areas, so $48.5 million a year. But that transformation that I talked about, those last two bullets kind of touch on that. So when we look at how we do service delivery now, we know we need to virtualize our network. We know we need to increase that speed to outcome because that's really what people want. When they order a service, they basically want it to arrive when they need it. So, cloud. For us, cloud is not a buzzword. The cloud gives us some leverage for the speed to outcome piece that we're trying to pursue. But if you take a network that's mostly hardware and software centric, and you look at either building a private cloud that uses virtualized technology, software-defined networking, you connect to the commercial cloud where they have a similar thing, you have a mismatch, or you have a gap that you have to close. So we brought some new vendors on board to take a look at the cloud technologies and the network architecture that we have and start to help us understand those gaps. And then finally, new efforts. Part of this is we've had same prime vendor for going on 16 years now. So you've got a government entity that's managing this contract and managing the services. You have a prime vendor, large business that has been providing those services for 16 straight years. When you talk about moving to the cloud and doing some different things, I mean, no kidding, different things with your people, tools, processes, and technologies, we really want a third set of eyes. We want an independent set of eyes that comes in and says, I'm looking at your schedules, I'm looking at your tech refresh and modernization plans, I'm looking at your current network, I'm looking at what you think you need out of the cloud, and here's our assessment. Here's how ready you are to do that. For the integrated program assessment, that's probably a lot less technical, but that's more of a, as we move towards the NGEN recompete, as we move to improving service delivery, and you start looking at schedules, you look at budgets, you look at processes you have in place, you look at the technologies you're trying to use, you look at the industry partnerships that you have, you look at the grand vision, you look at the project milestones. When you tie those things together, when we award those contracts in a 2018 timeframe, we're either going to be in a good place, right? We're going to sign a contract with somebody and things will be well. Government and industry will work together pretty well. Or it's possible that the minute the ink is dry, you're already behind the eight ball, right? So we want another, again, third-party independent view to come in and say, I've looked at where you are with all your activities. When you sign that contract in the spring of year X, you're either in good shape or not in good shape or somewhere in the middle. The integrated baseline review part of it is simply when you move forward, sometimes it's good when you sign a contract of the size that we're talking about to say 90 days, 120 days after contract award, let's take a timeout, let's sit down, and vendor who's partnered with us, let's understand what resources you're going to bring to bear to actually execute that contract. Government, let's look at the roles that you have to make sure that we can manage it properly. So moving from some kind of understanding of where you are when you do contract award for those NGEN recompete contracts, and then a few days later, 90, 120 days, sitting down and saying, how well are we both situated to be successful? That's the IBR piece. Okay, so small business for us is a big deal. We have it on the NGEN contract. We do it within the program office. We've been constantly adding new things, the cloud network architecture, graphic illustrations, and then the two new efforts that we have planned for this year.
We do things differently than you might expect other major program offices or PEOs to do things. We're very focused in on how the business industry does this kind of work. And we also have what's called an innovation cell. This is another area where within the PEO and specifically more so within 205, but then moving to some of the other program offices here more recently, it's an effort to really push a more efficient and effective way of getting products into our networks, getting products from industry that are mature technologies and putting them straight into our networks as opposed to going through a long, drawn-out contracting process. We've had a lot of success over the last couple of years since that innovation cell has been first stood up, and we're going to continue on with that in the near future.
That's all the time we have for today. You just heard an excerpt of a panel discussion from a recent FCIA Northern Virginia Enterprise Information Small Business Forum. The panel featured Donald Harder, Patrick Fitzgerald, Patrick Truver, and Phil Anderson, who run the Navy's Program Executive Office Enterprise Information Systems Small Business Centers.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.